You are listening to local and regional news produced by KMUN with help from our news partners. I'm Skylar Butenchin. It's Thursday, December 18th. A flood warning has been issued by the National Weather Service for many rivers in Oregon, including the Wilson River in Tillamook County. Minor flooding along the Wilson River, particularly during high tides, is expected north and east of Tillamook until early Friday morning. In South Pacific County, high wind warnings are still in effect. Some minor tidal overflow is possible today and tomorrow, but not expected to be significant. Drivers should not attempt to drive around barricades or drive through flooded areas. And be especially cautious at night when it is harder to recognize the dangers of flooding. For all up-to-date weather information, you can go online at weather.gov. The city of Manzanita, at the northern tip of Tillamook County, has declared a local state of emergency over city-owned property where erosion and wet conditions have destabilized a slope. KMUN's Katie Frankowitz has this report.
According to the city, sections of sedimentary material have fractured and slid down slope, leaving exposed soil and debris. Yesterday, the area was being assessed and stabilized ahead of a forecast that includes heavy rainfall and strong winds through Friday. The property is on Oak Street near the city's Public Works building. Manzanita City Manager Lila Amon says four homes below could be impacted if a landslide were to occur. The city contacted the homeowners on Tuesday to inform them of the situation. Manzanita Mayor Catherine Stock says the emergency declaration allows the city to act quickly and responsibly to protect public safety. The declaration ratifies actions already taken by city staff and will remain in effect through at least January 8th and may be extended. Manzanita Emergency Manager Sergeant Mike Sims is coordinating with Tillamook County Emergency Management. The city has placed plastic covering and sandbags at the property. On Wednesday, the city also took steps to divert water from the area. Amon says the city has also engaged a geotechnical consultant to get recommendations for next steps. A site investigation is planned for today. Amon emphasized that the city is actively monitoring the site and the situation. Manzanita will provide additional updates through the city's website, social media, and listserv. I'm Katie Frankowitz reporting.
Winds over 50 miles an hour Tuesday night and early Wednesday morning caused widespread power outages along the coast. The winds also ripped a hole in the roof of Hangar B at the port of Tillamook Bay. Hangar B is the home of the Tillamook Air Museum, which was closed yesterday. Port of Tillamook Bay General Manager Michelle Bradley said that a contractor was going to assess the building and make a plan for a temporary repair with more storms in the forecast. The high winds are not expected to return, but an atmospheric river is forecast to bring 4 to 5 inches of rain to the coast through Saturday morning. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Tillamook Headlight Herald, online at tillamookheadlightherald.com. Washington Governor Bob Ferguson announced $3.5 million in state assistance for those affected by ongoing flooding. He says more details about how to apply for the money will be released in the coming days. Ferguson says the funding will help affected households pay for things such as groceries and hotel stays.
It's for folks for very short-term assistance they may need. We want to be clear, this is not going to replace somebody's home. That is not what this is about. What we're trying to do is provide a bridge until we get federal disaster relief.
Ferguson says this natural disaster is one of the most devastating in the state's history. State and federal officials are assessing damage. Ferguson says that information will help the federal government determine how much money to give the state. Ferguson is also in talks with lawmakers about unlocking more state dollars once the legislative session begins. Meanwhile, the Washington National Guard has about 250 soldiers helping with the situation. They are filling sandbags, preventing people from driving down closed roads, and helping residents evacuate. State regulators are looking into claims that two Skagit Valley farms had workers on duty during the catastrophic flooding the region saw last week. Monica Nicholsberg reports.
As an advocate with Community to Community, it's Lucy Madigal's job to check on farm workers in the Skagit Valley. So when she heard reports that workers were in the Brussels sprout fields at Skagit Valley Farm after dark last Wednesday, she went out to see for herself. Madigal says she saw workers operating heavy machinery in the mud after an evacuation order was issued for the area.
I feel upset and sad of like the fact that it's always farm workers that get left behind. Like everybody else gets to go home, prepare for the worst, but yet why are there still workers outside working?
The next morning, an advocate she works with saw workers processing potatoes at Knudsen Farms. The State Department of Labor and Industries has opened an investigation into the claims.
This is KMUN. People across Washington state are displaced after days of heavy rain and flooding. In the Cascades, some businesses are becoming temporary shelters. NWPB's Murrow Fellow Renee Diaz reports.
Along U.S. Highway 2 near Stevens Pass, floodwater has moved through low-lying areas. Squirrel Tree Resort, located near Lake Wenatchee, has become a landing place for people who have nowhere else to go. Vito Fedor owns the resort. He wanted to do something after seeing the damage firsthand.
I went over there where the homes were flooded and the RVs were flooded. I just posted it online. Hey, free rooms and free RV sites. Yeah, probably housed, let's say, about 40 people so far.
The resort sits between closures on U.S. Highway 2, leaving only limited routes in and out of the area. I'm Renee Diaz reporting.
A single-vehicle fatal crash happened late Monday night on Oregon's Highway 47 in Columbia County. The preliminary investigation found that a southbound Dodge Ram operated by 60-year-old Todd McCarthy of Vernonia left the roadway for unknown reasons. His vehicle struck a utility pole and trees before coming to a rest off the roadway near Milepost 58. McCarthy was declared dead at the scene. Oregon State Police investigators were assisted by the Vernonia Police Department, Columbia County Sheriff's Office, Vernonia Fire Department, and the Oregon Department of Transportation. Oregon lawmakers are bringing back a bill that would increase the state's lodging tax to pay for wildlife and habitat conservation. OPB's Bryce Dole reports.
The bill would increase a tax on hotel, Airbnb, and campground stays by 1.25%. Its supporters say that would raise tens of millions of dollars. That money would go toward programs in the state Fish and Wildlife Department to protect imperiled species. Danielle Moser is the wildlife program manager for the nonprofit advocacy group Oregon Wild.
If we don't invest now, not only will it be bad for our environment and for wildlife in Oregon, but it will be bad for the tourism economy. That is the main driver of why people come here in the first place.
A similar bill died during the last legislative session, but the latest bill has bipartisan support. Opponents fear that raising the lodging tax could discourage people and businesses from visiting and working in Oregon. I'm Bryce Dole, reporting.
Opponents of Waldport's mayor have been given the green light to gather signatures to try to force her out of office. Petitioners accuse the mayor of creating a hostile work environment for city staff, among other complaints. KLCC's Brian Bayhuth has the details.
Waldport resident Susan Swander has filed the needed paperwork to begin collecting signatures to initiate a recall of Mayor Heidi Lambert. Lambert says she was surprised by the filing given the recent unity with council members regarding the opposition to a potential ICE detention facility in Waldport. The mayor says she plans to stay in office.
Voters deserve to have fact-based information, and this entire petition is reliant on just opinion, and it's actually incomplete characterizations of the events or of me, and there's totally a lacking of documentation or evidence.
The chief petitioner has 90 days to collect 192 signatures from registered Waldport voters, which would mean a potential recall election would take place in early spring. I'm Brian Bayhuth in Newport.
turmoil at the Bandon School District has led to teacher resignations and parental concern. As Jefferson Public Radio's Jane Vaughn reports, many in the community are calling for the small coastal district to make changes.
Rebecca Farrell's kids started struggling in math class after the teacher resigned on a Friday near the end of January. Farrell says the substitute wasn't sufficient.
She was basically a warm body in the classroom, and my kids were flailing.
For Farrell, this was the first sign that something was off at the Bandon School District. The math teacher who resigned says he left because district administrators falsely accused him of having an affair with another employee. The district says it doesn't comment on personnel matters. Farrell says this mid-year shakeup confused her kids.
I don't know what's happening, so I've got to go get answers to try to tell my kids why their teachers that they really enjoy are leaving or being put on leave.
And that was just the start. Soon after, the district and the union began contract negotiations. Union President Jen Ells says they asked for a big raise, expecting to negotiate down. But she says the district wouldn't work with them.
We were in a bargaining session and the superintendent handed everybody sitting there the list.
It had all the teachers in the district and their hire date.
And said the union needs to pick 10 to fire.
Negotiations broke down, and a mediator helped the two sides come to an agreement, a 7% raise. But teachers and union leadership say they were then retaliated against by being involuntarily transferred to different schools or roles. Under the union's contract, teachers are supposed to meet with the principal before a transfer, be told about vacancies, and have some say in where they get transferred to. But teachers claim that didn't happen. Ells says the district didn't give details about why the changes were needed.
Any of the conversations felt very cryptic and very much like this had to be done. You might not understand, but this had to be done. That doesn't satisfy when you're completely hijacking somebody's career.
The district claims it did follow the standard process and it wasn't targeted. At a school board meeting, the superintendent said 37 of the district's 40 teachers saw schedule adjustments this year. Still, multiple teachers resigned. An English teacher and speech and debate coach had been there for 8 years. A middle school English teacher, 5 years. And a middle school social studies teacher had been there a decade. Some parents, teachers, and former employees say the problem is some school board members and the superintendent, Shauna Schmierer, who has worked there for over 4 years.
The buck stops with her. We're losing teachers.
That's parent Amber Berg. She and others have called for a change in leadership.
We're bleeding teachers because of her directly and because of her behavior and because of the way she treats people.
There have been other district resignations since Schmierer started. The director of operations and two business managers. They cited a hostile workplace as well as misconduct and intimidation from the superintendent. Chico Robinson is the local representative for the state's education union. He says he hasn't seen a district function like this and the community is losing faith in the school.
I've never seen an administration so openly toxic or a governance culture so compromised by personal bias and intimidation. It's not just about the contracts. It's about basic workplace safety, professional respect.
The district and school board didn't make anyone available for an interview after repeated requests. In a statement, the school board wrote that it's committed to maintaining transparency and fulfilling its legal obligations, as well as working toward a positive climate in the district. And there has been some movement. At a recent meeting, the board voted to begin an inquiry into some complaints about the superintendent and other issues. Meanwhile, a hearing with the State Employment Relations Board will be held in February for an unfair labor practices complaint the union filed. There's also an open case regarding the district at the Oregon Department of Education and an ongoing investigation at the Federal Office for Civil Rights. All of the changes and uncertainty trickle down to students, Elle says.
As a middle school student, you might have three brand new teachers, one of whom just started today, and school hasn't been going that long. It's really destabilizing for kids.
Farrell even considered leaving the district.
Definitely in the last 6 months, things have escalated. Over the summer, I had conversations with my kids that we may need to find a different school district.
She says her kids told her they want to stay, so they're hoping things improve soon. Concerned parents and community members created a group, Do Better BSD, to create positive change and demand transparency and accountability from the district. I'm Jane Vaughn reporting.
This holiday season is expected to break records for travel. AAA projects more than 122 million Americans traveling during these final weeks of the year, and that includes 1.7 million Oregonians. Marie Dodds with AAA Oregon says the high travel numbers are on trend with other holiday periods throughout 2025.
Well, this is shaping up to be a record year for travel, and every holiday, AAA does a travel projection, and every holiday this year, we've broken records, and that's the case for the year-end holidays.
Dodd says most people are traveling by car, but airline travel is at a record high, too. Dodd says to be prepared for busy roads and airports. She says to give yourself extra time and have provisions in case you get stuck in traffic or inclement weather. The federal government's end of minting pennies is already being felt in Clark County. OPB's Eric Newman reports.
Last month, the U.S. Treasury officially stopped making sense. President Trump ordered it because pennies cost more than three times their own value. But in Clark County, that's creating confusion for Alicia Topper, the local treasurer. She was recently told by J.P. Morgan Chase a penny shortage meant it couldn't fill the county's coin order. That money is used by school districts, courts, and for property tax payments.
Most people who come to pay their property taxes don't want to pay even a penny more on that bill. So my guidance, if we run out of pennies and when we run out of pennies, is we're going to round down.
Topper says the county can make its own policy, but she says there should be consistency between local governments. She thinks policy about rounding up or down should come from the feds, who stopped penny production in the first place. I'm Eric Newman reporting.
Up to now, the Northwest has had enough power to meet extraordinary demand, but according to a new study, the surplus is expected to turn into a deficit in 2026. At a meeting earlier this month, San Francisco-based energy consulting firm E3 presented their study to the Washington Senate Environment, Energy, and Technology Committee. The study shows that if the Northwest has a long cold snap lasting more than 3 days, it may not have enough electricity. That's partly due to the fact that power plants that provide, quote, firm electricity, such as coal plants, are being shut down. Almost all new power plants are intermittent wind and solar installations. According to E3, windmills and solar panels make only a small contribution to grid reliability in cold snaps. Data centers, electric vehicles, and manufacturing are expected to accelerate demand for power. Meanwhile, Washington's clean energy law commands electric utilities to get off fossil fuels by 2045. The state's last coal plant is scheduled to close at the end of this year. E3 says that in order to keep up pace with demand, more new power resources must be built in the next 5 years than has been built in the last 25 years. Last week, the Ilwaco City Council unanimously adopted the city's 2026 budget. It includes a potential grant that would help replace the HVAC system at the Ilwaco Community Building. The city's street fund in 2026 includes a $75,000 transfer from the real estate excise tax fund to help provide for needed matching funds for citywide road repairs. The road repairs are mostly being covered by a $1.5 million grant from the state's Transportation Improvement Board via its Red Town Initiative, which provides street maintenance assistance to small cities and towns. The project will bring pavement improvements to roughly 5 miles of Ilwaco City streets. The Ilwaco City Council also approved a 4.6% increase to the city's water rate, while keeping the sewer rate unchanged. Ilwaco will be welcoming its new mayor, Eddie Hillard, in January, along with multiple new city councilors. These stories come to us through a news partnership with the Chinook Observer. Read more online at chinookobserver.com. You're listening to KMUN News. If you have a news tip or story idea, get in touch. Email us at news1@kmun.org. Local and regional news on KMUN is brought to you by our news partners and the KMUN News team. That includes me, host and producer Skylar Butenchin, news intern Sylvia Thorpe, and news director Katie Frankowitz. Our news broadcasts air Monday through Thursday, beginning at 7:59 in the morning and 4:59 in the evening.